are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, October 13th, Friday the 13th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Scary Friday. But it's still casual, so Cliff Schechter will be joining us to look back on the week that still seems to be going on forever and ever. Also joining us, filmmaker from Super Deluxe, Vic Berger, will be joining us on the program. Meanwhile, Donald Trump defunds the Obamacare subsidies, potentially leaving millions without health insurance, millions more without health insurance. Simultaneously, Trump tries to scuttle the Iran deal, kicks it back to Congress. Wealthy Democratic donor Tom Steyer says his cash comes with impeachment strings. And Puerto Rico just awarded $5 billion in new debt, bringing them to nearly $79 billion in debt, and over a million of its residents do not have clean drinking water, and at least a million more don't have electricity. But they got that debt to keep them warm. Joe Manchin is the key to Republican tax cuts, and the white terrorist who nearly blew up an airport that you've never heard of. Because he's white. All that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you who just listen on Fridays, and I know there's a couple of you who do that. I don't know specifically who, or to the extent that I do, I'm not going to say. I'm not going to call you out. I should tell you that we have, that Michael has taken another impromptu vacation. One of his, it's the third week of the month I'm taking a vacation trips. But nevertheless, we have with us in studio today two people you have yet to meet. One's name is Jamie. One's name is Brendan. Some people know him as Patrick, but you'll be hearing a lot more from them as the show goes on. But I wanted to just give you a heads up so you weren't wondering if you were getting some type of like cross feed on some other podcast or program. Also, just a brief word. Yesterday we had some great calls in the fun half, and one of them was was in regards to a long-running feud I've had with someone who I'm not going to, it's not necessarily to go into this. But I just want to reiterate one more point. Because the argument was made to me, why would you have a feud with someone who you ideologically are simpatico with, right? Because I have a bit of a feud with someone who ostensibly we have very similar, I think, policy positions. And it is because of the similarity in those policy positions that what he spews is what actually is more problematic to me. I don't share an ideology with Joanne Reed. There are some things that we agree on, I would imagine, just like there's actually, it turns out, some things I agree on with Bill Kristol. Like Donald Trump is bad. But the point is, let's say I was a nutritionist and there was another nutritionist who was offering a a philosopher who we both agreed it's really important to drink water and to drink a lot of water. We want to encourage, that's what our agenda is. We want to encourage people to drink a lot of water. And part of that agenda, we're going to hand out free bottles of water. But that nutritionist is handing out water that is slightly sweeter than mine because it has radiator coolant in it. Okay? They pour radiator and coolant into it, which is much sweeter. The problem is it's also really bad for you. So we're handing out the same product. We have the same agenda, drink more water, except for that one is laced with what is effectively arsenic. And what that does is it begins to make my water somewhat suspect. So if you're out there and you're ideologically similar as I, and yet you're saying, like, don't pay attention to the Supreme Court. Don't pay attention to the federal judiciary. Don't pay attention to the funding levels of things like, you know, I was talking last night to someone who works who works for the city in representing people in housing cases, and they've been decimated. You've heard Ronald Reagan calling about immigration law. Public defenders. I mean, these are one of literally hundreds of things that are fundamentally altered. And, but the federal judiciary on a circuit court level alone, the Supreme Court, these are things that are going to last for generations. And when you say these things are irrelevant, then it actually hurts our shared ideological project. More so than somebody coming out there and saying, I don't think there should be single-payer health insurance. Because that argument we can have. I can argue. I can present the value of single-payer versus the value of a crappy market-based system. But if ostensibly we're selling the same thing, except for yours is laced with arsenic, then it's a real problem for what I'm selling. That's why it's more important for me to deal with people who are theoretically ideological simpatico, but are giving a fundamental misunderstanding of how our government works. You know, I mean, it's why John from San Antonio used to call all the time. He says, you know, we're not talking enough about the taxes that are going to need to be raised for single payer, because if we don't, we're going to end up with a situation like they had in Vermont, where they had the opportunity to get single payer there, and they had not built the political infrastructure that you need to push it through. They hadn't sold the dynamic of taxes are going to go up, but at the same time, you're going to pay less, that much less in health insurance. And because they didn't do that work, it failed. And now there's no single payer in Vermont. And frankly, you know, saying the Supreme Court or these courts don't mean anything. And you talk about the suffering of, you know, people who are, you know, so-called dreamers. And I mean, or what's going on in Puerto Rico. Yeah, it actually matters. It actually matters. I mean, it's very easy for some people to say, we can ride this out because maybe they're getting health insurance from the company they're working for, as opposed to having to get it in the individual market. Or maybe they're white and maybe they're a guy and there's no chance that they're going to end up suffering under any of these circumstances. But I think it's just, that's why it's more important to me. Also, just changing the mood a little bit, I got very heated. And I didn't mean to get so heated yesterday with the caller from Canada, because the last thing I want to do is to in any way suck Canadians into our muck. I mean, they are like the ballast of in this hemisphere, it seems to me, of just like, you know, politeness and.
You sure you want to do that?
Right. And that would be a damn shame if we got them sucked into our like toxic stew that we got now in this country. Speaking of toxic stew, here is Alex Jones. And he has a message for you that, oddly enough, I would like to echo.
Local church fighting the globalist? Is it exposing the pedophile rings? Is it exposing the New World Order? No, they're scared because the 501c3 tell them they can't be political. It's a load of unconstitutional malarkey, and Trump's overturning it. But these churches want to play it safe right into hell. Now, a lot of them are good, and if they're good, donate to them. But I wouldn't give another red cent to these name it and claim it glitterbug cults. I grew up in Dallas in Rockwall, folks, right in the middle of some of the biggest names out there. Okay? And I know about these preachers behind the scenes. Let me tell you. I never seen hookers that look so good. So you just need to understand these people are got helicopters, they got cocaine, and they are partying. And they are absolutely think you're a joke. Okay? And that's a whole nother area. It's just these churches, these big, giant mega churches are everywhere. Everyone worships these stupid preachers, and they're not doing anything to fight the world government, the whole beast system. These local radio stations fighting and fighting for the Trump agenda that is to free up the churches and free up Christians and not let the IRS persecute Christians. That's what's important. Because if we don't have the religious freedom, we have nothing. And the internet censorship is coming down. It's not coming down on these little glitterbird churches. It's coming down on us. And they're going against our local radio station sponsors. But they can't stop you committing today to donate to your local affiliates today. Mark it in your calendar and do it.
I just want to reiterate that if you are contemplating between donating to your megachurch or becoming a member of the Majority Report at jointhemajorityreport.com, just do it! Join the Majority Report. You become a member. And when you do, we give you an extra 2 hours worth of content or hour, 45 minutes really was the original deal. Somehow it's like we had mission creep. So become a member of the program today. We're going to take a quick break when we come back. Oh, I should tell you this before I do. Folks, you spend a third of your life in your sheets. Are they taking care of you the way they should be? Brooklinen.com. Look, I've had my Brooklinen sheets now for what? 2 or 3 months? Is it 2 or 3 months? Maybe more. They're fantastic. Honestly, they look great. Right now, on our bed at home, we have a, what do you call it? A duvet? Is that what you call it? The cover of the soft thing?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't have a duvet myself.
Well,
I have a comforter.
Yeah, I have a comforter, but you want to put a cover on it because when the kids come and pee, you don't want them to pee on the cover. I mean, on the mat, on the thing itself. We got it's nice. I mean, look, I'm an adult now, so I need to have nice sheets and comfortable sheets. Brooklinen has over 12,000 five-star reviews. They have versatile colors and patterns that complement any decor. Folks, it's luxury bedding underpriced. You have to try these sheets today. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer for my listeners. My sister got these sheets too. She loves hers. And they have two different like styles. The crisp cotton ones, my favorite. And then the other kind that are not my favorite. You get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code MAJORITY at Brooklinen. Brooklinen is so confident you're going to love their sheets. They offer a 60-day, or I should say 60-night, satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. All your bedding needs, folks. Brooklinen.com. Brook, And then linen, linen.com, promo code majority. These are the best sheets ever. I'm telling you, we're not going to have this this deal much longer, is my understanding. So if you're in the market for sheets, now is the time. Brooklinen.com, promo code majority. All right, quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, what our new members of the Majority Report team don't understand is that we have some traditions around here. And we actually have a Majority Report troubadour who adds to those traditions. And in this case, our troubadour is the one and only Jimmy Reefercake. And Jimmy Reefercake produced this touching ballad.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com.
That's correct. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com. And in fact, we have to celebrate the playing of that theme song, Cliff Schechter, here on the phone. Hello, Cliff.
Why, hello, Sam. I always like to come on and celebrate the playing of that song.
Yes, it's always, it's amazing how often we have you on the line just after that song plays.
Can I admit something to you, though?
Of course.
You know, a few weeks ago, one of these times, I found myself kneeling during that song. And so clearly I hate the Majority Report and America.
Wait, what do you mean, kneeling?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Oh, in protest. Oh, okay. All right. No, I have no problem with that.
I just thought it'd be good to be honest with you, you know, and I've been called a communist for that by the FreedomWorks people, but I'll get over it because the symbolism of that act was more important than everything else ever done.
Indeed. And
should I carry on this failed metaphor, or I guess we'll just sort of move on?
We can move on. That's
okay.
All right.
I mean, that's good.
We've got a lot to talk about, Cliff. There's a lot to talk about. And let's start with, I mean, honestly, it's just another one of those weeks. Fortunately, we're
they all are these days.
Fortunately, hundreds of thousands of millions of people have not died. And so we have that to be thankful for. But let's start with what is going on with the Republicans, because there's three dynamics from a legislative perspective and from just a policy perspective that's happening. One is Trump defunds the subsidy payments. And this is something obviously that came out of the 2014 Congress suing the Obama administration and saying that those payments were illegal, not authorized by Congress. But and now that Trump has said we're going to stop those, and it's going to stop. It's, you know, 2018 rates are probably locked in, but for 2019 it will destroy the individual market largely, I think. Between now and then, Congress could reinstate these payments, and there's some indication that there's at least some that want to. With the Iran deal, the certification, all it does is basically say now it's in Congress's hands to decide whether or not they leave the Iran deal, putting the Republicans in the position they never want to be, which is actually empowered to do what they say they want to do. Because
exactly, actually having to legislate. One position that Republican legislators never want to be in.
Exactly, exactly.
Having to actually legislate.
Exactly. And we also have this dynamic where the only way it appears, maybe not the only way, but the primary way that the Republicans are hoping to pass huge tax cuts is going to go through guys like Joe Manchin, maybe Joe Manchin in particular, but maybe Heidi Heitkamp, maybe Donnelly. So meanwhile, we have this going on, and there were reports earlier in the week that Mitch McConnell, the only thing he's caring about right now is getting judges passed. That's the only thing he's going to focus on because everything else is a crap show. But while he's doing this, he's being attacked by their own.
Yeah. It's kind of fun, isn't it? Because you have a couple, the Republican Party, and to its credit, has found enough room to not just have one wing or two wings of wackos. They really have like a couple different wings. And usually these guys are sort of on certain issues. They're at each other, right? I mean, they're arguing, they're fighting over stuff. There's sort of a Rand Paul element. There's a more of an evangelical element. There's more of a, more of a libertarianish of economics element. It's not to say they don't mostly agree, but they differ in like what they would like to emphasize, what's most important to them. And sometimes that leads to battles. They seem to all be coming together on one thing, though, which is that Mitch McConnell should no longer be Republican leader, which I find to be lots of fun. And it's a beautiful irony if you think about the fact that Mitch McConnell has spent his entire career fighting to create the very situation that looks like it may do him in, which is to have unregulated campaign contributions as far as they could go. He was the one who signed on to the case, you know, to the Supreme Court case, amicus brief, attacking the McCain-Feingold case, right. McCain-Feingold law. He's the one who signed on alongside Citizens United. There's a more recent one to go after individual limits, and I can't remember the name of that. McCutcheon, he signed on to that one too. This has been like his life's work, to corrupt our politics with as much money flowing around as possible. I mean, and that's not hyperbole. That is, has been literally the thing that's animated him more than anything else. And now he's in a situation because of what he did, the Pandora's box he forced open, that what you've got is you've got the Bannon wing, the populists, or known by their more popular name, Nazis. And those guys, which the funding mechanism there is largely the Mercers. There's probably others too, but let's just say, you know, it's Mercer money. So what animates them is a nationalist America defined by white culture and other sort of issues along that line, hardline anti-immigration, that kind of thing, Well, you know, Bannon, who is their spokesperson, basically, is now targeting McConnell. Anybody, they've said anybody who is going to support Mitch McConnell for leader, he will target.
And that's certainly how they ran the race in Alabama, right? I mean, it was,
yep.
They were trying to really stick Big Luther to Mitch McConnell.
Big Luther. Right. And Luther Strange was somebody who is about as right-wing as you can get. But at this point, and we've talked about this before, there are only two elements that can defeat you, which is, if you choose to support somebody from the establishment for leadership, you know, which Luther would and McConnell, and if you're not enough of a dick, you can't, it doesn't matter anymore how conservative you are. It matters that you're a complete dick about it.
Well, Luther, I mean, to be fair, I mean, he was a pretty corrupt guy too.
But it's not corruption. It's the insult. It's the published dickishness that you're willing to say, you know, to attack other groups,
right,
and, you know, say ridiculous, like, you know, Roy Moore is the prototype, right? I mean, still thinks that Obama's birth certificate was fake, you know, still thinks homosexuality should be punished with prison time or worse, you know, and essentially stands up and, you know, I mean, so let's call it what it is. He's a fascist. He thinks his authority and his God come before the U.S. Constitution, right? So when they told him to take the Ten Commandments stone away, no, that comes first, before the rule of law in the United States.
Right.
Also, when it came to certifying gay marriage, which was passed by the Supreme Court, he refused to do it. So twice he's kicked off from the Alabama Supreme Court. The only difference between him and Luther Strange, they're basically both as corrupt and right wing, but he openly, you know, flouts the laws of our land, and then Bannon goes in, you know, culturally, he's looking for people similar to that. So what do? You go to Staten Island and you support the great Michael Grimm, who, you know, former FBI agent who apparently loved the undercover life a little bit too much, such that he became involved in a restaurant with mobsters, didn't pay his taxes. You may remember fondly how he threatened to throw a reporter off of a balcony when they questioned him.
Right.
What does he have in common with Roy Moore? Well, he's broken the law. And he's an asshole, and he's an asshole publicly. I mean, that's the only other thing, you know, those are the things that unite these guys. So that's the Mercer wing. But then now the Koch brothers wing, the ultra-libertarian part of the party that really, you know, is ultra-libertarian and maybe supports things like gay marriage and immigration and stuff, that the Mercers don't, but they don't put their emphasis there. They put it there on deregulation and tax cuts, which is most libertarian organizations seem to do. That's really what they care the most about, maybe free trade too. So they're they disagree with the Mercer wing on that also. But they have also declared Mitch McConnell a failure in a letter they just released from all these Koch brothers supported groups, Freedom Works, the Senate Conservatives Fund run by the often crazy Ken Cuccinelli, wow, former Senate candidate, gubernatorial candidate in Virginia, who's a lunatic, the Tea Party Patriots, and other groups like that. So really, at this point, you have sort of the populist wing of billionaire money wants McConnell gone, and the Tea Party wing of billionaire money. Really, all you have left is whatever,
this is the thing.
Establishment.
This is what is amazing, because when you talk about the sort of free market fundamentalists with the theocrats and the movement conservatives, that's what we used to just call the Republican Party, right? I mean, in 2006, that's what I was just writing in our book, was just like, This is the party. The only difference is that now they are the dominant in the party. They're not the margins now. They are in between the margins.
Right.
And folks like Mitch McConnell are marginal. But what's weird to me is this, okay? And I think Mitch McConnell, and I imagine you would agree with this. Mitch McConnell, horrible human being in a myriad of different ways. But a very good strategist in the Senate. And
I say also very good strategist. B, what you can't take away from him is he works his butt off. Like he's there. He learns all the arcane procedures. And he defeats us sometimes because he puts more time into this. Because clearly getting, you know, freeing money and doing right-wing things is an obsession of his. But you still have to give him credit for he's outworked us.
Yeah, absolutely. He channels his hate and suppression of his
orientation. True self, whatever that might be.
Yes, into working very hard at trying to hurt as many people of a slightly different tint than him. And
what do they call it? Projection in the psychology world.
So here's the question. I understand why they attack McConnell from the perspective of he's great to run against, right? Like he's an effective person to run against because they need, for the same reason why they don't want to have to vote on whether or not to maintain the Iran deal, because that means they actually have to take a provable position on it as opposed to one that they can just take and preen. It seems to me that who do they replace McConnell with? I mean, let's say they were actually to get McConnell out, and maybe what we're watching is just this is the way they're going to get rid of McConnell. They're going to blame McConnell if they lose the Senate, or even if they maintain the Senate and lose the House.
Right.
They can blame McConnell. Because they know the Republicans have all the power. It's very hard to say the Democrats are stopping us because they have 48 votes in the Senate. I mean, it's a hard.
Trump still tries to tweet that.
Well,
out.
Yes, and people laugh.
He's got
at
the make believe person in the hospital.
Right. I mean, people laugh at him about it, and so they know that that's not effective. So they got to blame McConnell. And I guess the idea is that, like, well, if if the Democrats take the House, I mean, who do they replace McConnell with? Who becomes
the Senate
leader? So, I mean,
first of all, you have to think, you have to think about it from the perspective of these guys, which is kind of like how they have plans to win power, but then they never have any plans how to legislate or do anything once they get there. They don't seem to plan that far ahead. They're like the dog chasing the car that then crashes and, you know, catches up and doesn't know what to do. Because if you look at the situation with McConnell, so compare it to the House. Remember, these were some of the same very forces that basically ousted John Boehner and were pushing to get rid of him. But they had no idea who they wanted to replace him with at the time. You know, the Koch forces, yes, with Paul Ryan. The sort of more populist forces, no. But who were they going to find? You know what I mean? And so we didn't even know who they were going to pick for leader. For a while there, it looked like they might not be able to pick anybody. And somehow they all came together on Paul Ryan, and unsurprisingly, now they all hate him. Because no one can keep all these wings happy. When they weren't in power, you know, and when Buckley, I mean, it's sort of the myth that Buckley got the social conservatives together with the economic conservatives and the foreign policy conservatives, and they all agreed to sort of sublimate their differences. And, you know, maybe that's true. Maybe it was other forces that got it. Maybe it was just desperation because they were out of power and they hated, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, the New Deal was still ascendant and all of that. But whatever it is, you know, these differences start to show up when you actually get power. And there's no glossing over it when, you know, the Bannonite Mercers are brilliantly anti-trade and the Koch brothers are absolutely pro-trade. But just the way they're, you know, the Koch brothers want to cut infrastructure spending and all that kind of stuff, which the Bannonites happen to agree with the establishment on, the Chamber of Commerce, sort of them, who think that we should spend on some of that stuff. So you've got all these different competing interests and they're all fighting with each other. And they can't push away some of these differences anymore because some of the differences, the biggest one that comes to mind is immigration, are sort of front and center. You know what I mean? I mean, it becomes something that they feel so strongly about that it almost becomes a defining issue. You know, so for someone like Trump, immigration was probably just about the most defining issue, his position on it, which horrified both the Koch wing and the establishment wing. So whatever is left of that. So that's the thing is, I don't know what they replaced McConnell with. The one that comes to mind, who's an ambitious little punk and seems to do well playing to the various groups right now, is Tom Cotton. But I still, at some point, Tom Cotton has to take a position on immigration, pro or against.
See, Tom Cotton would be an idiot to take that job because Tom Cotton wants to be president. And the only way that Tom Cotton can be president is if he can always not take a definitive position on this. Because this is a Harvard graduated, simple guy. I'm a simple guy.
I
go through life and I just hate me some brown people, and I'm a simple guy, and I don't want to get too caught up in any of the...
I love when they fake all that stuff. So for whatever my dislike of Ben Sasse is, and there's a lot of it for his positions, but he's actually chosen on some, you know, to actually say a few things, you know, to not endorse Trump, and to more recently come out and criticize him on his comment about taking NBC's license away, to which led Sean Hannity, you may have seen that, to tweet out that he was sorry he ever supported Ben Sasse. And Ben Sasse then, of course, attacked Sean Hannity and said, "You've changed, I haven't changed." Point being, even just criticizing Trump for wanting to...
Will you just say that again?
What?
That fight that they're having? Because it's just sort of sad.
It is sad.
Go ahead.
Do you want to play sad music to it? Okay.
I did.
First it happened.
No. Go. I mean, if someone out there could animate the exchange between Ben Sasse and Sean Hannity,
you've got some.
You were never
listeners.
The man I thought you were. That's what they both said to each other.
I know you betrayed me. You've got some talented listeners. I think can find a way to put it to video and music, and I would encourage them to do that. To put those tweets in it. But so the point is that by even sort of taking, not even by taking a real stand, which is to sort of be like, hey, like what you're doing here is unconstitutional, or you shouldn't be taking money from anybody staying at the Trump hotel, or maybe even just coming out against like the crazy Obamacare thing. You know, it's not like Ben Sasse has been some sort of profile in courage. All he's spoken out on is opposing wanting to take away the license of a TV station. So then a guy whose very existence is because another TV station has a license, Sean Hannity, who's too dumb to know that, of course, attacks him. So you're right. You can't take even the slightest position, because even the Ben Sasse is still right-wing, terrible in terms of his politics. Another Harvard guy like Cotton, who, you know, sort of faked the all shucks persona, you know, to be elected from Nebraska. But even the fact that he's even taken just sort of not even, I wouldn't even call them moderate, like, 1/8 steps, you know, to being critical of Trump is enough for everybody just on the right to write him off. So you're right. There's no way Cotton can lead it effectively. But I'm just thinking about who it is right now who's taken any kind of a leadership role. Remember on the stupid Iran letter that Cotton wrote?
Right. But let me ask you this. Do you think that the stuff with McConnell is just basically BS? Like, I mean, do you think it's possible? Look. It seems to me it's quite possible that these groups, they go and they make a show of Mitch McConnell, we're coming for you. And then the doors close. They come into the office and they're like, yeah, we're just going to do this probably for another. We just need to see what our fourth quarter fundraising is going to be like. And, sometime maybe in Q2, we'll shift to this. But in the meantime, we're going to do the old Mitch McConnell, we're coming for you. And Mitch is going, fine.
I think it depends who you're talking about. So I think the Koch brothers guys, I could see just making a big, you know, because their big stink is, you know, what they're angry about.
But I guess in Alabama, that was real. I mean, Mitch McConnell wanted Luther Strange. He did not want Roy Moore, because Roy Moore is immediately going to come into the Senate, and he's basically now
crazy stuff.
He's going to be the guy who makes Ted Cruz look like Pat Toomey. And Ted Cruz was the guy who made Pat Toomey look like Arlen Specter and so on.
Arlen Specter now looks like Bernie Sanders.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
I guess I'm agreeing with that. Like the Koch brothers, I think, are just pissed, and they feel like they're going to go after McConnell's book because they're angry because their investment in themselves hasn't paid off quite as much because he didn't cut Obamacare and cut their taxes even further. But if you looked at it in an objective way, which I guess they can't, Mitch McConnell, not to say that I admire this, but Mitch McConnell pulled together 49 votes one of the most absolute piece of crap pieces of legislation
yes.
that's ever been introduced in the U.S. Senate. It was to destroy 1/6 of our health, of our economy, our healthcare system, without even so much as hearings or debate.
Right.
And
right.
he got 49 votes for that.
And
which is actually incredible.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
That's true. And it came down to
that.
The wire. And it really took, someone's massively oversized ego really to make the difference. I mean, you couldn't.
That's right. It took everything and that oversized ego. So the thing is I don't, in the end, I mean, that it's kind of incredible that he was able to do that.
Yes.
But true. So I don't know if the Kochs are going to stay on. And I feel like they're going to try to get rid of him. But they're a little bit more, the Koch guys are a little bit more long-term willing to ride it out because they're still getting the deregulation they want from Trump. You know, they didn't want Trump in there and that kind of thing. The Mercer people, however, I mean, again, they're sort of Nazis.
Well,
and so that's different because you've seen Bannon do what he did in Alabama. And I fully expect, because with Bannon, it is emotional and it's personal. The Koch brothers, it's all about the bottom line.
Well, I don't even my sense of Bannon is that it's not about personal and emotional. It's that it is untethered from the Republican project insofar as he doesn't care if Donald Trump has no political, completes any of the things on the agenda. Because I think from Bannon's perspective, like, he can ethnically cleanse the United States in his perspective. From the executive can do this through ICE and through the Department of Justice. I mean, what's going on with immigrants in this country is really nothing short of terrorism. And they're just trying to scare the hell out of people and drive them out of the country that way. And I think from Bannon's perspective, it's like he doesn't care if it's a democratically controlled Congress. And maybe in some respects, it's even better because his whole agenda was, and he said it was the deconstruction
of the Republican,
the deconstruction of the administrative state. And that's happening.
He's trying to burn down things. That's the difference. Whereas the Koch brothers have, I mean, and I do think it may not necessarily be personal, although I think some of it is, but it is based on emotion. Cause if what is sort of neo-Nazism and Klanism and that stuff is not based on overt emotion, hatred. So his broader project, he doesn't care what gets destroyed in the meantime. He doesn't care, as you said, about a Republican majority. He doesn't care about any of these things. Whereas the Koch brothers, to hold off certain regulations from being repassed. I mean, if Donald Trump is gone, the Democrats win the presidency and they take back the House and Senate and hold it, then they could re-regulate certain things or whatever. And the Koch brothers are sitting there with a chart, I'm sure. They're sitting there and they've got listed what they want, what specific return on their investment they want. So it's a different project than the one Bannon's involved in. So my guess is the Koch guys go after McConnell because they want somebody who's more effective because nothing is good enough except for repealing Obamacare. But they maybe back off when they realize McConnell's the best they're going to get. The Bannon people, however, do not see backing off. I mean, the simplest example is they've got the already right-wing nutcase in John Barrasso in Wyoming, who's voted with Trump something like 96% of the time. But again, he doesn't fit that profile of Roy Moore and Michael Grimm. He hasn't publicly been an asshole. He's too quiet in his voting conservatism. He's not shaking up the system enough. So they've come out and mentioned now two different people, both of whom are familiar to all of us, who they would like to see take on Barrasso and replace him from Wyoming. One is Eric Prince, and the other one is Foster Freeze.
Yep.
I mean, and if either of those two guys were, they would fulfill the project. There's Eric Prince, who likes to go and have his people commit war crimes, torture and murder Iraqis, and seems to never get held accountable for it, among the many other things he's done wrong. He's also connected, by the way, to the Russia probe for some of his involvement meetings in the Seychelles. And then you've got Foster Freeze, the guy who goes on TV, who's a religious right nut who goes on TV and says women should keep their knees together. Then we wouldn't have to worry about birth control and stuff like that. These are not what you'd call quiet conservatives like Barrasso. They're part of the overthrow of anything decent and in the public good. And so
when I see Foster Freeze say that, and even maybe what's his face? Although it's more likely Eric Prince would jump in. I mean, his sister now is now Secretary of Education.
That is true.
But when I see Foster Freeze come out there and say, I've had a lot of people who've said to me, you should run. That sounds to me like a lot of consultants who go up to a billionaire and say, like, you are really, really good. I mean, you should really think about running.
You're,
that to me sounds totally like I can make a ton of money off of you in a short period of time.
Right. Well, and that's probably true. But I read, I'm trying to remember where it was, that the Bannon people had also reached out to him.
Very possibly. Why wouldn't you bring in another billionaire? It doesn't matter what, if you're a lunatic.
Well, and another religious nut like Roy Moore, a billionaire, who's going to come in and not going to respect any tradition at all or any of the sort of ways things have been done, not really care about what laws are because you now care more about what you see as your God's law than the Constitution. These are the types of people that they're trying
Foster
to recruit.
Foster Freeze was the primary financier for Rick Santorum's campaigns, if I remember correctly.
That's right. So that's another thing they have in common, because you have to remember, before going to Trump, the Mercer Empire was behind Ted Cruz.
All right. That is why I think Bannon was out there. People are like, why are they not touching Ted Cruz? Bannon was in Cruz's camp before he was in Bush's camp. And
you mean Trump's?
Into Trump's, yes, exactly. Sorry.
Fine. But you're exactly right. All these guys, you know, Foster Priest was always with Santorum. The other guys were with Santorum and then moved over to Trump. And, you know, if Trump fails, as far as they see it, they still have a bright light, God help us all, in Ted Cruz for president. And if they can have Ted Cruz as president, you know, along with Roy Moore and Foster Freeze and some of these people in the Senate, I mean, imagine what becomes of the Senate. So, I mean, this is, you know, again, you talk about burning it all down, that starts to burn it down. That's all that Bannon wants to do.
So let me ask you this. Let's just pivot to it may not be the near term, it may now be the midterm, but what do you think are the chances? I mean, look, I think it is unlikely that the Republicans are going to be able to pass these tax cuts without one Democratic vote. I just think it's going to be difficult for them to do.
I would agree.
Because, you know, one Democratic vote means that basically all the Republicans have license to vote for it, right? But without that Democratic vote, you may lose Rand Paul. Well, Rand Paul probably wouldn't do it even if a Democrat did, but you may lose Rand Paul, and there may be one or two others that, are posturing a little bit.
Well, now that Susan Collins has announced she's not going to run for the Senate, as she had been flirting with.
No. She's not going to run for governor. She is going to be running for the Senate.
I meant governor. Excuse me. So she's sticking around in the Senate, which is important because LePage would have gotten to appoint some loon in the meantime. If she had resigned, and if she had won in 18, then between 18 and 20, we would have probably, or, you know, I don't know what the law exactly is about how soon they have to have an election in Maine, but we would have been stuck at some point. So that does change the equation a little bit because again, you know, if you have Collins is not willing to go along with some of this, perhaps she's always been a little more conservative on the tax cut stuff. So I don't know. I mean,
the question.
It does seem hard to get all these votes together.
What's Manchin do? What does Manchin do? Like, is it the issue for Manchin is he needs to pay off, he needs to deliver for his donors, right? Or they, and for the big sort of coal money, I would imagine in West Virginia, or just even outside money that will come after him hard. He's trying to make some deal. Like, you need to promise me that these people do not spend money in my race if I vote for this, right? That's the deal that he's hoping to make.
I was just reading that he has, with how red West Virginia has become, he still has a 57% approval rating, which is a lot higher even than, I mean, even George W. Bush, even in West Virginia, is in the 40s. So, you know, he can afford probably to stand up. I mean, what will he do or what should he do? I mean, obviously, what should he do? Common sense to me would be to barnstorm across West Virginia and explain to people who mostly are too poor to ever see a cent from this tax cut that they're never going to see a cent from it,
right,
and it's going to all be given away. However, he also is still supported by the idiot governor there who switched over from the Democratic to the Republican Party. Still says he's supporting Joe Manchin. So, you know, I think Manchin has a little more freedom to do what he wants, in a place like that. I think more about somebody from a more libertarian state like Tester from Montana. What does he do? Mm. Or Heitkamp from North Dakota, who has clearly shown a willingness on guns, for example, you know, something I obviously follow closely, to completely take a Republican line. Will one of them break away? I wonder, you know.
Donnelly,
Donnelly. I think Manchin's in a better position to not do it.
Interesting.
I'm not saying he won't, but he's in a better, because he's got bipartisan support with the Republican now governor supporting him and his high approval rating and yada, yada, yada. But you know, Heitkamp and Tester, you may remember, each won by less than 1% last time. And that was in a presidential year.
At what point does it become too hot of a potato, too close to 2018 for the Republicans to pass their tax cuts? Because Ted Cruz is already talking about it in terms of next year.
Oh, that's interesting. I do think, I mean, that's the thing. I think it all comes down to how well Democrats fight back and message this, which I'm not sure I always have faith in that particular. So let's hope everyone. But I mean, you know, it's sort of like, again, somewhat to a certain degree, it's going to be on all of us, like Obamacare was. You know what I mean? I mean, if the messaging can get out there properly about who is benefiting from this and who is not, which is almost everybody, then I think it's possible to defeat this thing. And I think if the right actions are held and people do their jobs in Montana and North Dakota and Indiana, you know, maybe you can forestall and stop this thing. But obviously this thing is going to be, because it's easier to lie about it, it's easier to say to people who are opposed to you, oh, you're getting a tax cut. You know, it's a lot easier than it is. They obviously tried to lie about health care. But again, remember how close they came. They got 49 votes on that thing. And this thing, while terrible, I can't see being any worse than that, because I think it's almost impossible to be any worse than that bill was. Mm. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's just going to be everybody's going to have to man the barricades again. And particularly again against with those couple of Democrats, because it was harder for them when they knew they were going to hurt their constituents to try to lie to their faces if they're a Heitkamp or someone.
Well,
whereas it's much easier to lie about taxes.
I also,
of course, everybody's getting a tax cut.
I also think that the amount of, I'm still convinced that the Russian collusion story, because of all that sort of baked into it, for people coming from those red states, gave them a certain amount of cover for not going along with Trump's agenda that was unique to
and
Trump. That's
tweets.
The only thing that
and,
unique.
And
to,
it, well, I think
yeah, the tweets
I would say
too.
That, I would
the
say
tweets
also,
too.
The tweets and picking fights within his own party,
I
so
think
they
so.
Weren't on the same page, helped too.
I think so, but I think like now that that's died down a little bit, and you know, maybe it picks up. Maybe there starts to be indictments, and then seems to me all bets are off, right? It's like,
that's
I'm
right.
not going to vote with the president of the United States who may have, you know, given the Ruskies the keys to the White House. I mean, I don't think
well,
that's
then you
the
can,
case.
Well, then you can eat, literally just say that, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the thing is, that was what I was going to say. So, you know, you got there ahead of me, which is the only the other circumstance I see stopping this legislation from happening, besides people making sure to keep the Democrats on board and pressure the few Republicans. Is exactly that, is either the Russia stuff or some of the financial back dealing. If something really like ridiculous comes out about the Trumps or Kushner or whatever,
right,
enriching themselves, which, you know, there's so much of this kind of crap going on that something like that, and then Trump will respond and call it fake news and freak out on Twitter, and then he'll get in a fight publicly with a couple of
Republicans.
Did
Jared Kushner pass away? Then, how come he hasn't been in the news the past 2 weeks? He's completely like submerged after some of those stories. I haven't seen a single
right, well,
thing written about
that
dude.
Looked like somebody
2 weeks. It's the
yeah.
like the first 2 weeks I haven't had to read about that guy in, it feels like, a year. But all right,
I saw something. It may have been 2 weeks ago about him enriching himself. I don't know. You know, it's hard to keep up with all this stuff.
Well, all the time.
All the self-enrichment.
Cliffy, yeah. As always, thank you very much. Next week, I will be in Las Vegas trying to upgrade our equipment in this office by sitting down at the blackjack tables. So
I think that's a solid plan touch. For making it happen.
Oh, yes. No, definitely. All right, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care. Thanks, man.
Bye. Cliff Schechter, everybody. Cliff Schechter. We will get to Vic Berger in just a moment. But, folks, and I do want to, I'm going to want to play clip number 9. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't want to come down too hard on you. But for months, I have been warning you, telling you to prepare yourselves. I've seen this before. When Republicans control all the levers of power, they are left with only one fight to fight. And I have begged you and beseeched you, prepare. Winter is coming. Winter, specifically Christmas season, is coming. That's what I've said to you. And I hope you have been ready. Because it's on.
And something I said so much during the last 2 years, but I'll say it again, as we approach the end of the year, you know, we're getting near that beautiful Christmas season that people don't talk about anymore. They don't use the word Christmas because it's not politically correct. You go to department stores and they'll say Happy New Year and they'll say other things and it'll be red.
Happy Memorial Day.
They don't say, well, guess what? We're saying Merry Christmas again.
They're all standing up and applauding. All those old white guys, every single one of those old white guys, and some of their old white wives.
And as a Christmas gift to all of our hardworking families, we hope Congress will pass massive tax cuts for the American people.
There you go. Donald Trump speaking at the Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C., declares on August 13th, 2017, that the war on Christmas is on. And as such, now that that has been declared, I now officially... Thank you. Declare that the war on Christmas is on. So you will be getting your marching orders soon, but we will start with this. If anyone tries to wish you Merry Christmas in the coming days, the middle of October, you just start with, and a happy Christmas to you. It's a slight shot off the bow. Not a Merry Christmas, a Happy Christmas. And just let them just like, what? What's that? Did they say Happy Christmas and not Merry Christmas? And then as they're walking, like they'll bump into something.
It's a psyop.
That's just the way. It's a psyop. We do this slowly. Slowly. Because by the time we get to December 25th, is that when Christmas is? Is it 25th or 23rd?
I don't know. Nobody says anymore.
By the time we get to the 20s in December, you're going to be saying Allah Akbar, but slowly, in a way. That's the way we're just kind of creeping, or, you know, Shabbat Shalom. That's the way we're going to roll this. But more information to follow. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break and talk to perhaps the internet's premier auteur, Vic Berger. We'll be right back.
tan swimming in blood. Tinsel ribbons dancing in the rain. Flowers on the skyline, hey, how is the wine? What comes round's going round again. Towers coming up forever.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program the resident auteur at Super Deluxe, his new title that I have given him.
Yes.
Vic Berger, welcome to the program.
Hi, Sam. How you doing?
Now, Vic, first off, let me just say, let me both thank you and apologize to you because we ran the numbers. 75% of our content has actually just come from replaying your videos on our show.
Well, that's great. I'm honored.
So I want to say thank you. First, we're going to play this one just because it's one where I think people can hear it as well as see it. But just to give people a sense of what you do, because you find footage and then reinterpret it. From all sorts of things, but we will get into how much it became a political thing for you a while back. But here is one of your, I don't know if it's one of, you consider one of your classics. It's one that I really enjoy and we liked around here. This is Donald Trump. I think people recognize the voice. Here we go.
My fellow Americans, when I ran for president, I made a commitment to the American people to repeal and replace Obamacare. But now that's changed. Today, through the Sharper Image, you can enjoy the world's greatest steaks in your own home with family, friends, anytime. And you're going to finally have the affordability they need and the quality they deserve at a lower price. Trump steaks are by far the best tasting, most flavorful beef you've ever had. Truly in a league of their own. It'll cost you less money by a lot, and it'll be a much better steak. You can't do better than that. Trump steaks are the world's greatest steaks, and I mean that in every sense of the word.
Every sense of the word. And the klaxon. First, let's talk about the klaxon, because now we had the window open today. They were doing some construction work because it's Brooklyn, and all they do in Brooklyn now is build big buildings constantly. And they have klaxons, I guess, like when they're about to drill something. And we can't hear a klaxon without thinking about you. Where did the klaxon come from?
Well, that I mean, first of all, I just think the sound is funny. And like, I've always thought it was a hilarious sound. But it really, like, came about when he's had all these rallies about, you know, 2 years ago, and people are fighting and chanting, and he's doing, like, call and response things, like, at the pep rally. And immediately I thought of like sports and where, you know, if you go to like an Eagles game or something, you, there's somebody always with an air horn. And I just figured that it would be a way to, you know, imply that it's like a sports event kind of thing. And, you know, this route, this, you know, this jerk who's got the air horn also gets to help bully the other, you know, people right on stage and interrupt them. I, you know, he would always interrupt Jeb and take him off his game, you know, so that's kind of where it is. And that's just evolved. I was hoping I actually like around on, election day, I made a video of me burying an air horn. Like, and I was gonna, you know, post that as the end of the air horn era and everything, but ended up not being able to do that because he won. So yeah, he had to stay.
Well, let's talk about, how did you get into to doing this? I mean, it's you first sort of like it was on Vine, right? Which is now defunct.
Right.
But tell people how you got into it, because I mean, I know a lot of filmmakers from back in the day that I was in independent film who took found footage and made some, you know, real pieces of work that, you know, would show at the MoMA, or would be, mm-hmm, they would piece together these documentaries, and you're taking videos online and reinterpreting them in what is a hilarious way. But I really genuinely think like this is like genuinely artistic what you're doing. How did you, were you a filmmaker? How did you sort of fall into this?
No, well, I've only been doing video for about 3 years now. I, you know, my whole life I went to Berkeley in the early 2000s for music, and I thought I was going to have a career, you know, as a songwriter or performer or something, or, you know, a record producer, wanted to be Brian Wilson. But, you know, I quickly found that that's not easy to have a career in. So I, you know, I ended up doing music therapy for about 10 years. And then to get some of my songs out on the internet, I figured that, you know, you want to have a video with it so people pay attention to it more, because it's hard to get people to pay attention. So I just started messing around with video, and like, I'm not trained at all. You know, it's just, it's all instincts, and just kept going from there. And I had the help of Tim Heidecker from Tim and Eric. He's from my hometown. So he came across some of my stuff and would help me share it and get it known and give me tips and everything. And I would just evolve. I mean, yeah, Vine was the really helped me. I mean, most of the stuff that was on Vine, I hated. You know, all the Vine stars and everything. I think there's a lot of junk, but it was a good way to get a thought out, you know, in 6 seconds and get it out quick and comment on something that happened in the news. So I miss it for that, but that's kind of where I, you know, refined what I do. And I'm still learning, you know, how to edit properly. And
what,
you know,
do you,
there's a
what
lot
do
of software out there that I don't understand.
What do
I use Final Cut Pro.
Oh, so I mean, that's not, I mean, that's a fairly legit, it's not like you're doing, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like Premiere or what the, yeah, what they use for movies or whatever, you know. But, yeah, that's what I do. And that's where I am. Just hopefully, you know, Final Cut stays in business for a while, until, so I don't have to learn a new software.
How did you, I mean, you know, one of your, I guess, muses, obviously, is Donald Trump, but Chubby Checker ends up being one of your muses.
Yeah.
Like Jim Baker, I can understand, certainly,
right.
Like, you know, particularly the Staying Alive stuff as of late,
right.
And Steve Harvey to a certain extent, but why Chubby Checker?
Well, he's another hometown guy. He's from Philly. Actually, Manayunk, I think, is where he's from. But I just went to a Borders bookstore just to check out, you know, a book, and over in the corner was Chubby Checker signing his new album. Just like, there's a CD, and it was like a reggae twist record that he just put out, and he just had this weird hat on, and I just thought he was just interesting and bizarre. And, you know, he's this old guy that, you know, had a couple of hits, you know, and he had the twist, and, but he's still trying to relive the dream and get back on the charts. And I just thought that was interesting. And then, you know, 10 years later, when I'm just looking for footage to mess with and make a Vine out of, I came across Chubby, and then I just went down the hole, you know, the YouTube hole.
Oh, the Chubby Checker hole,
live
of course.
Of it. Yeah, the Chubby Checker hole. That's a hole you want to stay clear of. but I went, you know, I went deep, and I found a lot of interesting interviews. A lot of him, you know, bringing up like the sexy women that he could find in the audience to twist with them, and he'd get real inappropriate and slap them on the ass and everything. And so I just, you know, went from there and turned that a lot of the stuff that, you know, because from the stage, like maybe he's like, he seems like a sweet old man, but if you go a little deeper and you can see this darkness to him, and I just kind of like bringing that darkness out. And, so it's just something to work with, but he knows who I am, and because we tried contacting him when we were doing this election special last year. We went to the conventions, and then we were going to the DNC, which was in Philly, and we're like, hey, might as well call Chubby to see if we can get him on. And we got in touch with his niece, who was doing the bidding for us, and she's like, Chubby said he'll talk with you, you know, but he's not going to dance. He's not going to dance. It's going to be a 5-minute interview, and it's going to cost $750,000. So, like, what?
$750,000?
$750,000, because he's that important. You know, he's the king of the twist. So,
you did know, you we, come we, back with a counter that, offer?
Yeah. Yeah, we countered with $1,500. And she relayed that message to him, and he... He came back with $1 million, so he went up. So yeah, it wasn't gonna happen. But that's Chubby. I mean, that's what you got to do. You got to pay up if you want to talk to the Chub.
Well, look, I mean, I think I'm gonna try and institute that too. I mean, if I could fail like 1,000 times, but if I get one person who's willing to give me $750K,
right.
Boom.
Right.
So were you always political? I mean, you know, in the Trump era, it's not, you know, it's sort of like, I guess, low-hanging political fruit on some level.
Yeah.
Have you become more political? Yeah. Were you political? What?
Yeah, I've become more political. I mean, I remember listening to you on the, like, one of the first days on Air America years ago. Huh. And I, you know, that's kind of when it started, actually. So thanks. But I did, you know, like, through the years, I paid attention, you know, as much as I could. You know, it hasn't always been this insane, you know, really. I mean, there's been craziness, of course, but
do you know
I think
Atrios?
The big thing for me was I needed
Atrios.
What's that?
Atrios lives in Philadelphia from the blog.
Oh, no, oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, all right. Well, you should. Read,
okay.
You should read that blog.
I will. Definitely. What did I say?
I didn't mean to throw you off there.
But
you got into the politics, so you've been paying attention. I mean,
oh yeah,
it's not like you can avoid Donald Trump now,
right? And I the main thing for me was like I needed footage, you know, because like I'm not just for what I do. I take footage that exists already, so I there's a you know an abundance of political stuff out there that and all the debates were happening and all the candidates were announcing, so. So I just would, you know, go from there and then, you know, I followed along and here we are, you know, so I've been, you know, obviously been paying probably too much attention lately. That's not healthy for the brain.
Right. Well, so let me ask you, so that when you sit down with some footage, like, do you have in your mind, because from my perspective, I mean, of course you're obviously trying to make it funny, but there's a lot more going on there. Do you sit down with it and say like, okay, here's what I'm pulling out of this in terms of the subtext, and I'm going to reimpose it, right, onto this mm-hmm. footage. I mean, is that the way you do it? Do you sit down with, like, an idea in your head that, oh, this exchange is about X? You know, this is what's brewing mm-hmm. under the surface, and then I'm going to reimpose that through the edit? Or is there
yeah,
a process?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think, I mean, a lot of my videos are mainly, like, the subject or the opinion that I have is pretty, they're pretty basic. You know, they're not these huge concepts really, but, you know, like the Trump thing that you played is just like he's a garbage businessman. He's a D-list salesman, you know, and that's he's always going to be that. And he carried it on to the presidency, and he's still that, you know. But yeah, I think a lot of the I'm just going through footage, watching things, and I will highlight something that seems awkward or something that sticks out, whereas you know, someone's clearly lying or you know, fibbing, and but yeah, it kind of evolves as I'm going, you know, what the point is. I usually don't set out with an initial point at the start of it. And a lot of times I really don't know where it's going to go, if it's going to go anywhere. And it's like a big puzzle piece that I'm putting together. But I think the big thing that I'm doing these videos for is because I'm not super eloquent, in debates with people or trying to convince people why, you know, say Trump is a bad person, why he shouldn't be president, you know? So that's why I kind of use a different form of communication, using the editing, you know, and like, here, this is what I would say if I could, you know, put it into words properly.
Now, you though have gotten into some like pretty big social media wars. You and Cernovich seem to, it's sort of wonderful to watch the dance that you guys, I mean, Cernovich, tell us about it, because you, I mean, in addition to sort of just going after it, Cernovich has attempted at least on a couple occasions to pretend that he has been assaulted by the left, like physically assaulted. And then you've come out mm-hmm. with footage that you found that completely debunks his claims in it,
right.
Both in a hilarious, but also like, I think for him, probably an embarrassing and a delegitimizing way. What was the genesis of that?
Oh, probably like right around election time, I just started seeing his tweets in my feed from people. And I can't help but, you know, poke the beast. So I like would see him tweeting about how Hillary is sick, you know, and she's dying. So then I just like, for the hell of it, started a little campaign of that, you know, that Trump has rabies, you know, and I had these videos of him like spitting and stuff like that. You know, he's foaming at the mouth and his brain is dying or whatever. This just to mock him, just to mock Weird Mike. So then, you know, I would
Weird Mike.
Weird Mike. It's a perfect name for him. It just sums him up.
Weird Mike. He is weird.
And then I think, he didn't like something. I forget what it was, but something about Pizzagate. I think that was just clearly like anything that I'm doing is in the realm of comedy. I'm trying to, you know, like poke at him and make fun of him, but I'm not like getting super personal with him or anything, but he took it as that, and he sends me an email. He finds my email address, sends me an email, and challenges me to a debate. And he implies I'm a pedophile in the email, like with no backstory. Just like implies that I'm a creepy guy. I'm probably a pedophile and probably touched children. Like, so I'm like, okay. So then he posted that publicly too. Like, and so I responded to mock him, saying that, I'll debate you or whatever you want. You know, if you take a video of yourself standing in your head singing Chubby Checker's The Twist and post that, and then something, I forget what else, the other thing was like doing cartwheels or something. And then, you know, give $10,000 to, you know, an anti-rape foundation, like a nonprofit, you know, since you helped get, you know, Trump elected and everything. So then, then you do all that, then I'll gladly debate you. So then that's when he like lost it. And he started to like, actually, you know, he blocked me, I think, after that. But then 2 months later, somebody like sends me a text saying, you should check out Weird Mike, what he's doing. And he's like all these tweets and all these like creepy blog posts about me, how I'm this, you know, I'm possibly running this child sex ring on Twitter and all this stuff that's just
best place to run the child sex ring is right on Twitter, yeah. Where they would least suspect.
Right on public on Twitter. Yeah, it's a great place to do it. So that's, yeah. So then from there, it's like, I didn't know how, like, I didn't know much about Pizzagate at the time. You know what I mean? I knew what it was, but I didn't realize he was that involved in it. And that, then around that time was when the shooting happened, you know, yeah, the guy shot up the pizza place. So I was just trying to make sense of it. Cause I have like people like, you know, contacting me like on all platforms that, like, you know, somebody found my number, somebody found my email, somebody's, sending me things that they're gonna like stab me in the eyes, and Jesus. And you know, I have kids, and it was seriously scary for about 2 weeks, where it, like, if the mailman would ring the doorbell, I would jump.
Right.
So it was legitimately scary to me, and I didn't know what was happening, because like it was just constant hate my way. And then you know, he did all these he also did all these Periscope videos all about me. Like, you can see, if you go to my Twitter, it's like, it's up there somewhere. All these videos of him talking about me, they running this ring, and it's horrifying. And then Twitter did nothing about it. They didn't care. They just silent, you know? Cause I mean, it's just something he does all the time, but it has like real life effects, you know?
Right. And so, where are you with that now? Are you still, you monitoring Weird Mike?
I still monitor him a little bit, but like, I'm at the point where I've told him, I was like, dude, if you think this is true, then like call the cops on me. You know, like I've emailed them, just like asking for like a retraction, just to, you know, get these people to stop. But of course he says he's not going to do it and everything. So I've just been like, all right, then, you know, if you want to keep pushing it, just call the cops. And I've just continued to, like, you know, make fun of him with his, when he posts these videos of him being, you know, assaulted or being on Alex Jones, messing up, you know, or just cutting Alex off, which I saw that on your show first, actually.
What's, that was unbelievable.
Yeah.
That was, what a sad.
It was amazing.
Nothing like having your on-air audition go so south.
So bad.
To be,
I don't think he's been on since. I think
no, I don't. I think, I honestly think that like I would have to be the worst judge of a facial expression to think that Alex Jones is going to try a second audition for that guy.
Right.
He looked
right.
Genuinely like, God, this guy. Last time I do goddamn Roger Stone a favor. So who's the next muse? Do you have one lined up?
Oh, still looking. No major candidates right now. I like working with Steve Harvey and Baker. I still want to explore those guys a little more, but there haven't been a ton right up. I don't know if you have any suggestions.
I don't know. We'll keep our eyes open, certainly.
Yeah.
Are you by chance? Brendan wants to ask this question. Are you a relation to Victor L. Berger, who is the founding member of the Social Democratic Party of America?
I wish I could say that, but I'm not.
Not. I had my.
I'm the fourth. I'm Victor Berger the fourth, but I don't have a middle name. We don't have middle names here, so there's a possibility that I am, but not that I'm aware of.
All right. Well, duly noted. So wait a sec. Now, all right. So, Vic, we got to ask you this. We very often, I mean, this segment started back in the day when, you know, streaming movies were a new thing. That's how old this show is, and how and particularly when my son was born, my second child. Then I like completely sequestered in the home. But now, because everything is online anyways, it's become a different request. But what, give us a recommendation of what we should watch. It can be a movie, it can be a series, it can be anything that one could watch on one's streaming device.
Right. Well, I have, you know, very young kids, and we watch, you know, a lot of the Disney classics, which I love all the old animation. And, you know, of course, Frozen is on all the time here.
Wild Kratts?
Yeah. What is it?
Do you watch Wild Kratts?
No, I don't know that one.
How old are your kids?
I will check it. They're 1 and 3.
Ah, yeah. Okay, forget it. When I show them four or five Wild Kratts.
I would recommend. Oh, I will look it up.
It's good.
I really like Betty Boop, like the old Betty Boop cartoons. Oh, yeah. I think that they're pretty nuts. Yeah, I don't think they're on streaming, but you can get them all on Blu-ray. They're chronologically listed. They're highly recommended. The Fleischer Brothers, they're really fun. I think they're good if you want to just forget about Trump for a while. Put those on.
Betty Boop. All right.
Kids love them. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. Vic Berger, Betty Boop. All right, Vic.
That's right. And Popeye. Popeye, too.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought about that. I feel like my son might like Popeye. And then you can also, that's the way you get him to eat their greens, too.
That's right.
You got to, these shows have to do double duty. Vic, thank you so much for what you do. Honestly, like, I can't tell you enough. I'd say at least once a week, you provide us a tremendous amount of joy in the otherwise like sea of just horror that we wade through in prepping for the show. And when we run across one of your videos, wait a second, you've got record coming out.
Yeah. I do. I have a record coming out somewhere probably in January, actually. It's going to be a vinyl. We're going to press it up. And it's like 12 songs from 2000 until like 2015, something like that. So spanning, you know, that long. And I've never released anything before.
Wow.
You know, I've recorded like hundreds of songs. But so this is my first official release.
Now, have you announced this anywhere else?
Just mentioned it a little bit on FMU a couple months ago.
Whose show on FMU?
The Ultimate. What's his name?
You don't even know.
Prove It All Night with, oh my God.
All right, but so this is the first
Pat
time.
Byrne.
Okay, but this is the first time that you've mentioned it on non-terrestrial radio. Is that right?
Right. The whole world can hear this. That's going to be on
So we are breaking this news. The first non-terrestrial radio mention of Vic Berger's music album, ladies and gentlemen. Just one more reason why the Majority Report, your source for breaking news. There it is. All right. Well, thank you, Vic.
Thank you.
Again, honestly, thank you so much for your work you do, and keep doing it. Looking forward to more.
All right. Thanks so much, Sam.
All right. Thanks. Vic Berger, folks, check out Super Deluxe or his Twitter feed, really, is the... you could check out both places.
Me and a friend of mine
A
friend of...
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the first time I've ever gotten that correct.
That is right. A friend of mine and I think.
That's the first time I've ever gotten that correct.
We hang out about once a week. One of the first things we do is go to YouTube and search Vic Berger for the most recent videos and just watch whatever he's made.
Right. And they're also incredibly high when they do that. Am I right?
Yeah. We're getting there.
All right. There you go. That's the way they warm up over at the Lech residence. It's like Hef's place over there. folks, we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song for you, ladies and gentlemen. Just a reminder, your support makes this show possible. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade, coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. We will post in the majority.fm Twitter feed, the Twitter feeds of both Brendan and Jamie.
Do they want to say them on?
Do you want to say them on air? I mean, and then are these guys, we're going to go to town in the fun half. But
Yeah, sure. My Twitter handle is @Jamie_Elizabeth, and I spell it the right way, J-A-M-I-E.
Why the underscore?
I don't know. I wasn't really thinking that hard about it when I got a Twitter handle. I didn't know if Twitter was going to turn into anything. I don't use my middle name for anything. I don't know.
The underscore always baffles me.
Well, Jamie Elizabeth without an underscore looks pretty ugly.
Jamie. Oh, yeah, because of the double E.
Yeah. Gross. Right.
Fair enough.
So tell me how much I suck. Or
no,
whatever.
I was just going to say, like, you could say Jamie ampersand. I don't know. All right. Brendan. Well, Brendan's going to be super weird, too, I bet.
Hi, this is Brendan. I reprise the role of Patrick here on the Majority Report.
His Twitter feed, is it Patrick? Is that right?
My Twitter handle is BF1NN. The one is a stand-in for I. It's B Finn, but
I
is a one.
Oh, interesting. There you go. B Finn, except for it's a one. That's also, if you're just curious, that's also his ATM pin. So you could use it. All right, folks. We have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the week. What is it called, Matt?
McDonald's Szechuan Sauce Riot. I don't know how to pronounce
Szechuan?
That.
Szechuan?
Szechuan.
Szechuan.
Okay, thank you, Jamie.
Wait, did you not know how to say Szechuan?
No.
Do you?
Yeah.
Szechuan. What?
Szechuan.
Szechuan? Szechuan.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, my God. We have two people in the studio who don't know how to pronounce Szechuan.
I don't know if I've ever pronounced that aloud in my life
how
before.
Do you say C-H-I-N-E-S-E? Chinese.
This starts with an
okay. A. All right. So it was, I'm sorry. Say, and now I'm confused. What is the Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the day?
McDonald's
Szechuan.
Szechuan Riot.
Okay. McDonald's Szechuan Riot.
Sauce Riot.
Is this for us, this song?
I don't know.
There's a riot at McDonald's. They demand more Szechuan sauce. They want more Szechuan sauce. Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce. In St. Louis, they protest police violence. But at McDonald's across the nation, they demand more Szechuan sauce! There's a riot at McDonald's. They demand more Szechuan sauce. They want more Szechuan sauce. Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce. Millennials, what has become of you? I can see that the Szechuan sauce has taken control of you. They want more Szechuan sauce. Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce. They want more Szechuan sauce. They demand more Szechuan sauce.
Wow, there we go. I mean, I know what Rick and Morty is, and I know what Szechuan sauce is, and I know what McDonald's is. But I do appreciate the reference to St. Louis because it's getting no attention. There is still ongoing protest there. And I imagine there's something else going on. What's going on with you millennials and your Szechuan sauce?
Can I just say, being a fan of Rick and Morty is kind of like being a fan of Tool. And I say that as a fan of both of those things, in that those things are both great, but the other fans kind of ruin it.
Whoa. I'm not even sure how to interpret that, but...
Do you know what the relation is between Rick and Morty and the Szechuan sauce?
Yeah. It was a reference on one of the episodes. That's it.
Oh, all right.
And so now that they're upset with McDonald's?
Well, no. They talk a lot about it on this one episode.
Brendan
and everyone
to exactly
wanted to try it.
Here.
And then McDonald's brought it back, but not enough. And people were very angry.
Oh, is that right, Brendan? I mean, are you a millennial?
Yes.
Are you like post-millennial? Pre-millennial? Like, you got to hit that button.
Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry, it's reverse, so you don't need to hit the button. Just
okay. Yeah, I'm firmly millennial, I would say. And
okay, what's going on with the Szechuan sauce?
All the Rick and Morty lovers are trying to get this sauce that McDonald's was putting out at a few locations, and they all drove ridiculous amounts of distances.
This is true, or are you just making up like fan fiction?
No, this was like, this was on Twitter this past weekend. Tons and tons of people.
It's really real.
I've tried to stay off Twitter. I forgot there's a boycott going on right now. Did you know that?
Of Twitter?
Yeah, there's a women's boycott of Twitter.
Why?
Because Rose McGowan, who I don't know who that is.
Oh yeah,
she's
an
actress.
You don't know who that is?
No.
She's like '90s dream girl. Aughts dream girl. I don't know. My husband is in love with her.
I don't know who she is, but I know that she's an actress who came out and spoke out about, she got into a fight with Ben Affleck or something and spoke out about, does anybody know what happened?
She called out Harvey Weinstein for his behavior towards her. And then she sent an email, I think, to her manager, talking about a bunch of other things, screenshotted it, a bunch of other accusations, and then Twitter disabled her account after she posted that because she violated the terms of, I don't know, the agreement terms that you wouldn't post someone's phone number, and it just seemed like a really petty reason to silence her over this huge issue and like this big revelatory thing.
Yeah, that's why you gotta watch out for phone numbers. I guess. I don't know. But I was trying to stay off it, and I think I forgot this morning one or two times, but I think it was a 12-hour boycott, like midnight last night. I don't know. I don't know the full details of it. But all right. Well, with that said, thank you guys for explaining the Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the week. We will take a break and head into the fun half. 646-257-3920. I will be back here on Monday in preparation for my trip to the Mass Torts Conference in Las Vegas next week. And if you are a member, see you in a second. Sad.